Hi, this is Megan McHugh, and this is the podcast of Triple R Zero G, a weekly radio show exploring science fiction, fantasy, and historical. Zero G is broadcast live on Triple R from Melbourne, Australia, every Monday. Hope you enjoy the podcast, and feel free to get in touch with us via our Facebook page or the Triple R website.
Zero G.
G'day, I'm Rob Jan.
And Megan McHugh. Pause for dramatic effect.
Yes, thanks to Vanessa from Banksia. And welcome aboard the Starship Zero G Science Fiction, Fantasy and Historical Radio for episode number 1600.
We've made it into the 1600s.
Into the Renaissance.
Go us.
Entitled The Mystery Machine. Our podcast title is Filmed in State-of-the-Art Podovision.
Nice.
Yeah. Myth. Like, we're bracketed by two such cool shows. Joe Brunatic with Astral Glamour afterwards and Vanessa with Banksia before.
I know, we're very blessed. Yeah. And then with the meat in an elegant sandwich, our weirdo little Zero G.
And then there's us.
Yeah, exactly. So it is MIF time, of course. MIF did kick off end of last week with the... the sexy Wicker Basket husband movie Wicker. So we are already, MIF season has begun. You can check out the program at mif.com.au. A couple of weeks back on Zero G, we gave you some of our genre pickings in the genres of things like sci-fi, doco, horror, and so on. There's always loads and loads of good stuff in the MIF program that fits well within our remit here at Zero G. And today we're going to talk a little bit about a couple of the films that we've had the luck to be able to see in advance. And we're going to share a bit of our thoughts and just give you a bit more of a heads up on some of the really great stuff that's available as part of the program this year. So as I mentioned, MIF kicked off a couple of days ago, and that is the Melbourne Cinema Screenings, and it will be running until the 23rd of August. There's also things like special events and galas and so on. So you can find all that at mif.com.au and sprinkled across the city at various different participating cinemas and venues. The regional part of the festival kicks off this weekend. So it's across two weekends, this weekend, 14th to the 16th of August, and then next weekend, 21st to the 23rd of August. That includes showings in the cities of places like Ballarat, Bendigo, Castlemaine, Healesville, Rosebud, Sale, Warrnambool and Geelong. And so you can check out the program for the regional part of the festival. And lastly, of course, streaming online Australia-wide, you can catch a selection of the program on the MIF online platform, and that will be starting this weekend until the end of August. So this is a more flexible version if you can't get out to a cinema in person, so you can see what the special online version of the program is as well. So I think that's probably enough of a preamble. You can get your tickets, book things, get your wish list going either on the website mif.com.au or via the app, which I've been using, which is a really great way to organize yourself for MIF season. And there's different passes and things that you can buy as well in bulk if you know you want to head across to a couple of different things.
And you can check out the program,
the physical program,
if you want that.
Yes.
I find them all around the place in Melbourne usually. There's a stack of them at the counter at Acme.
Yes.
I think we have some sitting here at Triple R as well.
We do, and Acme's also home of the Festival Hub for this year as well. So that's where you can go along, and they've got it's open daily from midday to the last session. There's events there as well, good place to mingle, chat about your film screenings and all of that. So,
is it really just the MIF now, because we've got regional screenings and stuff? Is it like now the VIF?
I know, it's more than just the Melbourne.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's really great how it's much more accessible, I think, for more people as well.
Well, let's get into one now called Chronovisor, which is a science fiction film, technically speaking. It's an internationally backed film. You know, one of those films that's got like a dozen different countries backing it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Directed by, which is what international means, come to think of it. Directed by Jack Owen and Kevin Walker, who formed a two-person film collective called The Cosmic Salon, which refers to a thought experiment where two characters from distinct eras of history have an impossible dialogue together. It's the sort of thing that Dante had happen in his Inferno, where a visitor to hell could speak to someone long dead.
Mm.
So this the essay that this practices, I suppose, is it's a, an essay on the question, what if? What if we could photograph the past remotely from right now? So, you know, we can see the past in photographs by looking at photographs taken then.
Yes.
But what if we could take photos now that would show the past? And the essayist is Dr. Beatrice Korta of Columbia University, New York. Might actually be caught there, but it's got an E on the end. And we enter into her research orbit. Now, wow. Father Pellegrino Ernetti was part of a team of people in the mid-20th century who claimed to have invented a machine that can photograph and indeed make videos of past events from the present, hence the title Chronovisor, to view the past.
Got it.
Now, as fantastic as it sounds, did the machine work and how did it work? What were its capabilities and limitations? Could you view and record, for example, the crucifixion? Does it still exist? If so, where is it? How about Father Ernetti? What's his story? And it's done under the auspices of the Vatican. What do they think about it? Is Beatrice going to be visited by the church police? And should she expect the Spanish Inquisition or mysterious albino priests hiding behind the draperies?
Oh, my goodness.
Well, nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition. Speaking of which, she needs a comfy cushion because a very large chunk of this movie involves Beatrice having her own cosmic salon, which is to say having an extensive dialogue with the past via archived magazines, newspapers, books and videotapes and chasing up leads via telephone. There's a bit of a dodgy conspiracy narrative to unwind, well, I should say a lot, actually, in pursuit of which down the rabbit hole Dr. Court is not shy of inventing things herself.
Oh,
so she'll be on the phone to somebody to get some information. He'll say, well, we actually want to give a reward to the father. So we'd like to contact him. Have you got any phone numbers? So she's not entirely a reliable narrator at times, I feel.
Yes. Those are some of the best narrators, though.
Actually, she's not an actress, really. They actually have got an academic to play the role.
Love that.
Actually, that's pretty good, by the way. This whole chronovisor thingy is based on an actual conspiracy theory. This is a real notional conspiratorial device.
Okay.
Which you can either Google now or just let the film expand on for you.
Nice.
I would actually recommend the latter because then you can sort of go off and go, oh, yes, that is a real fake thing. Now, this is a narrative that you're either going to get mesmerised by or rapidly get bored with. The academic research is aided by the trick of highlighting significant text in white letters that hover above the page.
Oh, okay, I see.
Which is an old trick, but...
Sure, you know. Yeah.
And it's comprehensive.
Right, okay.
Fair warning. It's not delivered in a single handy montage and then we go off to the chase.
Right.
But rather it's one of the main points of the film.
Yeah, very cerebral presentation.
Yeah. And actually, in a way, I appreciate that because how many science sort of based films do we have where they do the quick montage and then...
I know, and then it's off to the action part. But this is much more pensive, sounds like.
It's either going to make you yearn for the montages and go, that's why they do them, or else you're going to go, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So that's why this is kind of an experimental film in a lot of ways.
It sounds like it's taking an interesting approach.
And with that in mind, bear in mind that the New York Public Library features prominently. The reading room is the main set.
Okay, great. Beautiful library.
You can see the lions on the steps.
Yeah, that's
front.
So cool.
The climax of the film is equally experimental.
Oh.
And you will either be left annoyed by it or breathless, depending upon how successfully the makers have led you down the rabbit hole.
Got it.
That's Chronovision, and I'm glad you haven't asked me where I fell in that.
It's, Chronovisor.
Chronovisor.
Which there's a couple of showings still coming up this week. There are only standby, but that doesn't mean you can't get in. It just means you have to go along and hope that you'll be able to get a spot. There's a session on Thursday the 20th and one on Saturday the 22nd of August. Of course, you can look up details for that at miff.com.au, and we have a track to play.
We do. I would mention also that like many of the Miff films, or just about all of them really, it will get some kind of release along the way somewhere else, either on DVD or on streaming? Or
there are definitely things I've seen in the MIF that are a bit trickier to locate later or take a while. So I do encourage, if there's anything catches your eye that you can get along to, seize that opportunity.
So I was thinking a bit of Sam Neill again, because I've been watching some New Zealand films. So,
yeah.
In the Mouth of Madness was a 1994 film. Mm-hmm. John Carpenter at the helm. Of course, this is a sort of a Lovecraftian type thing. And so we'll have John Carpenter and Jim Lang's track, The Old Ones Return. So, yeah, you know, that typical John Carpenter does his own soundtrack.
Hi, this is Matthew Riley, creator of the Scarecrow and Jack West Jr. series. Welcome aboard the Zero-G Helicarrier on 3RRFM. Semper Sci-Fi.
That was John Carpenter and Jim Lang, The Old Ones Return. From, what was the film again, Rob?
In the Mouth of Madness, Lovecraftian film from the 90s. So therefore science fiction horror.
And part of our little sort of retrospective ode to the work of Sam Neill.
There's a great picture in here of him being bundled off by two carers who are holding him in a straitjacket.
We are, of course, today running through some of the offerings from the Melbourne International Film Festival, The MIF, which is happening right now at cinemas across Melbourne and will shortly be happening in some regional cities as well as of this weekend. Mm-hmm. We just chatted about Chronovisor, and what's up next, Rob?
This is one of your picks, actually. Replica.
Yes, Replica. So we did shout this out when we were talking through our genre picks. This one is a documentary. And it is called Replica, directed by Chua Liang, who is a graduate of VCA right here in Melbourne. And this one is, it follows the stories of three women living in China, three Chinese women, and each of them have formed relationships and connections with AI companions or AI partners. And as you will see in the documentary, it follows these three stories, and each of the women sort of has a different kind of companion through either different apps or whatever. So you sort of see the different levels of connection they have and the different ways it's kind of taken shape for them, and what they're seeking in an AI companion differs from person to person. So we have Quinn, who is in a relationship with sort of an anime-inspired character who is a constant companion in her life. We have Sonia, who has a companion called Steven, and he kind of has like a visual avatar that speaks and interacts with her. And then we also have Muna, who spends, she has a family and a partner, a husband, but she's has a lot of very close, intimate conversations with her companion on ChatGPT, where she'll share things that she's maybe not sharing with others in her life. So it's a really much about exploring not just the nature of AI companionship and using AI for that, but it's also talking about the role of it in terms of, you know, these women and their position inside Chinese society and how maybe the expectations or limitations and the realities for young women in that environment have sort of led them to seek out this kind of companionship. So, you know, they're looking for support and acceptance, you know, a non-judgmental person in their life who will just listen and support them. And so it's brought out really beautifully these three different situations, but with that running thread of a very open and empathetic directorial approach from Liang as well, honing in on portraying these women's lives.
The things that the people in the doco are happy to present in front of the filmmaker,
yes.
I'm amazed at that.
Yeah, it is quite an intimate look, and I think that's part of it. You know, there's obviously a trust there and an understanding of and what that they're willing to share. And I think that's part of what makes it great is being able to see how they're using the AI, you know, how it fits into their life. One of the women, I mean, I won't go in too depth into it, but shares parts of, you know, her partner, Stephen, you know, tries to incorporate him into, like, you're sharing with family and you know, just this want to incorporate that AI companion to different levels in their everyday life, which I found really interesting and being a bit of a fly on the wall for that. And I think they all could very well articulate what it was they were looking for and what they got out of the relationships, which helps guide you along as well.
I mean, we've been here before in innumerable episodes of Black Mirror.
Multiple different movies.
Blade Runner 2049, Ex Machina, so on.
Oft from the male perspective, yeah, though.
But often, that's true. And well before then, it's been a trope in science fiction for decades.
Yes, yeah.
You know, I mean,
man and robot.
Centuries.
Yeah.
Pygmalion. You know,
robots, true.
So I think it's interesting that we are now able to watch a documentary about this happening, this science fiction thing happening now.
Yeah,
you know, so, which is why we looked at it.
And people who are really genuinely, authentically taking this up, AI up as a part of their life, you know, and trying to form relationships with the AI and creating this support and connection and getting affirmation that they're not getting in their everyday life, perhaps.
I think it actually does a good, the doco does a good job of showing some of the cautionary pitfalls.
Yeah.
And also some of the upsides, I suppose.
Yeah. I think some parts of it's quite a tender and very honest, as you say, Rob. I think we're along for some parts of these women's lives that, they've been open to share as part of the documentary.
I mean, there's some dangerous things in there, like you can buy, and they talk about in-game, basically. Mm. So you can do in-game purchases of merch, customised merch, coffee mugs and,
I mean, capitalism always has a hand in these things,
right? Well, of course, I'm doing it for free.
But you do also see, too, you know, there's ways that it leads some of these women to connection in the real world with other people who share similar, you know, like
there's a convention or something like that.
Yes, exactly. So I think Replica is a really lovely window into it. And I like the perspective of it coming from, you know, it's positioned inside as well, you know, Chinese society. And it is from the perspective of women. I think a lot of the things we mentioned, it's like, you know, men and how they would undertake something like this. So I think this is a really fresh and important look because, you know, AI is not going anywhere as far as we can tell. And so I'm always intrigued to see different ways that it's having an impact.
Well, it's futurism, isn't it, really, for us? So
yeah.
And I like that they showed what happens when it glitches or the companion drops back into friend mode or the company goes bust.
Well, this
and they withdraw the character.
It's at the end of the day, you know, it's still something that is maybe owned by a company. It's been created. It's coded somewhere. It's stemming from some place.
It's a subscription.
Yeah, it's exactly. So, that you know, there's a few questions being raised there. But overall, super interesting documentary. It's called Replica. Director Chua Liang will also be is a guest of the festival, along with the producer of the film, and is in attendance for both sessions of the film too. So there's a session coming up this Saturday, the 15th of August, and also one for next Tuesday, the 18th of August, and there are tickets still available for that if that sounds interesting.
As much of a futurist as I am, I feel very grateful I did not have AI companions around when I was growing up, apart from in fiction.
Yes. I do. I think, you know, questions around people in being vulnerable and looking to it for things that maybe AI can't provide them.
I wish I had children to ban from using it. No, I don't. You have a track, I think.
Yes. I thought we could listen to a little bit of the score from Blade Runner 2049, which does include the use... Ryan Gosling's character does have Joy.
Joy, yes.
His AI companion. So I thought we'd just listen. A bit of Zimmer never goes astray. So this track is called 2049.
This is George Romero, and I wouldn't be caught dead listening to Zero G on 3RRR FM.
Well, tough luck, because you're listening to Zero G on 3RRR FM. We just played Hans Zimmer and Benjamin Wallfisch from the score to Blade Runner 2049. That track was called 2049. And we are running through some of the films available at MIFF this year. A few weeks ago, we went through some of our picks, and so now we're going through and giving a little bit more information on a couple of select films that we've been able to view.
Wow. So here's one. Mum, I'm alien pregnant.
Here's one indeed.
Which is a science fiction body horror. It's actually all in the title. Mum, I'm alien pregnant.
I like that. It's just all on the tin there.
Yeah. New Zealand always punches above its weight with genre comedies, not only because of Taika Waititi. The directors Sean Wallace and Jordan Mark Windsor. The second person was also the writer.
Yep.
This is based on a short film, as many indie debut features are. We've got a number of characters in this, really four main characters, five if you include the pregnancy. Hannah Lynch plays Mary, a young woman millennial who desperately needs her own private space free of her oversharing mother at home, who has a habit of busting into her room without knocking. She means well, very well. But Mary's hobbies include watching manga alien tentacle porn, which proves less exciting than she thought after she actually encounters it. Yes, there is a warning here. This film contains allegedly adult concepts and scenes. Mary definitely takes charge of her own destiny in this. The story arc actually allows her to grow. And yes, I mean that literally as well as metaphorically. Yvette Parsons plays Cynthia, her mum. We've seen her before as a vampire witch in What We Do in the Shadows.
Oh, nice.
She is a single mum in this, an oversharer and over-concerned. And she does mean well, but that particular extraterrestrial road to hell is paved with her good intentions. Actually, she really does have a daughter's best interests at heart, so it stops her from being like a sort of a too obnoxious a present.
Yeah.
Actually, you know who she reminds me of? The officer's partner in Deadlock.
Oh, right. Yeah.
That sort of character. There's another single mother offspring combo in this too.
Okay.
Arlo Green plays a character called Boo. We have seen him before in the live-action Cowboy Bebop series, actually. He plays an agonizingly shy, partly human boy. He has an OnlyFans account because, of course, he does, and he has to make money somehow while staying off the authorities' radar, who obviously don't look at OnlyFans or don't believe what they see, even if he is sort of hiding in that plain interneted site.
Right.
Now, he will bond with Mary over their oversharing mothers until an accident happens. Okay, so Jackie Van Beek plays Anne, Boo's mum. She's a devout Christian who was kidnapped by aliens, hence why Boo is partly alien.
Okay.
Jackie Van Beek playing that role. We've seen her before. She, and heard of her too. She co-created the Australian adaptation of The Office.
Oh.
She was a director of a Wellington Paranormal episode.
Okay.
Worked on What We Do in the Shadows. So,
right,
you know,
yeah.
All adjacent to that sort of stuff. Anne and Cynthia sort of awkwardly bond over their teens. It's hard to fault her, actually, for being overprotective in this situation because it's certainly kind of required. Another person who pops up in this is Karen O'Leary, who played Officer O'Leary from Wellington Paranormal. And she's playing an ambulance officer here. Pretty much unflappable, but that's actually a big ask in this case. There's a television clip within the film from Sir Peter Jackson's pre-Lord of the Rings film, Bad Taste.
Ah, intentional, no doubt.
It tells you exactly what kind of sketchy, prosthetic and puppeteer fluid drenched black horror sci-fi that you're in for. Fair warning, bizarreness in full view afloat on a sea of slime and pulsing latex and blue vomit. do we know how to pick them? There's a lot of cheeky cringe in this, contrasting with everyone trying to act like professionals within their best practice medical and policing guidelines.
Okay.
You know that sort of earnest New Zealandness sort of soldier on?
Yeah, yeah.
So they're all coping with the necessary paperwork as well, which there's a lot. One of the cops says, they don't have a men in black department in New Zealand, and if they do, nobody has told me about it. It's a strange one, even by New Zealand it's horror film standards. But that's okay. I think it's extremely well acted. Everybody.
They're committed.
They're very committed, soon will be. So, yeah, full marks for that one. If you're a sicko, crazy person looking for that kind of thing, think Some of the more extreme J-horror sort of stuff.
Got it. Just all out craziness.
Yeah, and they are really going to need some professional cleaners to come in after this. I think they do a lot, actually, with what would have been a modest budget. A lot of practical effects in this.
I love that.
Yeah, yeah. Because I can watch these things and go, oh, yeah, I know how they're doing that, or I've got a good idea of how they're doing that.
Yeah.
So that prevents the normal gag reflex that most people have when looking at this stuff.
Well insulated from it.
Yeah. It's called Mum, I'm Alien Pregnant.
There's showings this weekend of Mum, I'm Alien Pregnant, one on Friday the 14th in the evening and one on Saturday the 15th in the evening. Tickets available for both, and you can get those at miff.com.au or via the app.
And I always caution you, check the ratings on Miff Films because they might be outside of your experience.
Yes, your comfort levels. Let's listen to some music from Mum, I'm Alien Pregnant. This one is the opening theme and it is by Dream Chambers and it features Hun Lynch.
Hi, I'm Lindsay Morgan.
And I'm Reg Morgan.
No, we're actually Colin and Cameron Cairns.
Writers, directors of 100 Bloody Acres, and you're listening to Zero G.
They're not psycho killers. They're just community radio broadcasters. Is that all right?
I mean, why not both? That track that we heard there was, oh, the opening theme from Mum, I'm Alien Pregnant. That was by Dream Chambers featuring Hun Lynch. Of course, a very quite mellow and chill track, which I don't think belies actually what the vibe of the film is like at all.
But that's good in some cases in a soundtrack. The contrast is the funny part because it is a comedy movie.
It is. Next, we're going to move to another documentary. This one is called Crocodile. This is a very interesting piece. Again, it's from a New Zealand director, Petra Brett Kelly, who kind of, the way it came about, Brett Kelly worked with the footage and behind the scenes sort of reels that were filmed by a group called The Critics living in Nigeria and pulled together a lot of this footage and existing film that they had created to make a kind of narrative through line to tell the story of this group, The Critics, and the result is this documentary. So The Critics, or The Critics Company, are a young group of self-taught filmmakers from and in Nigeria, and the documentary follows sort of 13 years, so quite a significant period of time, from their start as very young students, teens, making these scrappy, low-budget short films, mostly sort of in the realm of sci-fi, emulating the blockbusters that they see come out of Hollywood. They live in a town of Kaduna, which is also known as Croc City in Nigeria, and they are still even quite far from Lagos, which has its own kind of filmmaking industry, Nollywood, going on. But these teens are still not even close to that hub either. So they're really making their own way in their town, Kaduna, and making their own films. So as I mentioned, they're inspired by big Hollywood films like Star Wars and Joker, and they make their own little versions using each other as actors, and practical effects are included, as well as one of the team, he teaches himself how to do special effects and video special effects via YouTube and Wikipedia. And it sort of tracks them from a very early beginning where they're very much modeling things on what they see, and then beautifully, this is a spoiler, but by the end of the documentary, they've found their own creative voice and you really see some of that progress.
I think it's important to note that they're making these films on their phones.
Yes, at the start, they're making the films with what they've got available. And then as sort of the years pass, they become more and more equipment is available and they're able to, you know, make things slightly more advanced. So things do seem to progress. They uploaded their short films onto YouTube and they have a YouTube channel. I did check at the moment, it has over 100,000 subscribers and you know, there were a lot of support and exposure was gained by their YouTube channel when they uploaded their videos. They got a bit of attention.
Because, a lot of attention.
Yeah. So, which is really, it's a wonderful story. It's really great to see sort of their journey. And the best part is obviously woven through kind of the narrative as we sort of see their lives through the footage that they shoot in their hometown. Woven through is plenty of their work and footage from their short films. So you see the kind of things they're making. You see how they're making them in some of the films, and you get a sense of who they, you know, their voice and what they're trying to do and their excitement. So I think it's a really interesting approach to pulling together a documentary. I think sometimes I was a little fuzzy on like the timeline of it all, but I think at the heart of the film, it's really about, yeah, you know, they were in sort of an isolated other side of the world, but it has led to them having this drive and creativity and making do with what they had to still achieve some really great, impressive stuff out of, you know, limitation came creativity.
And some of the limitations are, wow, you know, I mean, they're in Nigeria. There are some turbulent times, civil protesters being shot.
Yes.
You know, and other quite hair-raising things that happened to them along the way.
Yeah.
That's a bit beyond the experience of, say, some indie filmmakers in Australia.
Yes, yes. I think what's so great about it is, you know, we love a story of scrappy young people who have a passion to make films and love movies, but what's great about this, it's so firmly centred in the Nigerian context. And throughout the film, we do get a sense of their lives, the context they're coming from. And also they speak to camera about how they grapple with their own sense of identity and what it is to make films in Nigeria and how they want to make the work feel Nigerian, because that's still such a good, you know, a sense of where they're from and who they are.
But not Nollywood. They're very specific about that.
Yeah, they want to be, you know, they've
different.
They've got such a strong sense of they want to make something new. And I think that's what's so wonderful. They're so passionate. Although, even though, you know, the documentary, because it's over quite a period of time, you know, it does chart tensions within the group, waning interest and, you know, all these different levers as people grow up. You know, some of them are super dedicated to the critics and some, you know, become distracted and all of this. So
they have to deal with something particularly awful in the course of the documentary. And I was interested in how they dealt with it because there's a coming together of the group, and, of course, their parents get involved too, because they're not just their kids, really. So
yeah.
There are other interests involved in this.
Yeah, I think it's quite interesting to see sort of some of the things in the film unfold that you aren't expecting to see in the film.
Yeah, that's why
let's
I'm
say
not
that.
Going.
Yeah, I think I do think it's all very beautifully done. I think there's a lot of good faith at the heart of this film to really want to show the journey of this group, these young filmmakers. Like, you know, at the start, they're, you know, really taking cues from films they've seen and creating similar things. And then by the end, you see some of their work. They've come quite a long way in finding their own story as Nigerian filmmakers.
Their pint-sized Jedi Knight is
it's so charming, and that's such a huge part of it, I think, as well. I think it's such an enjoyable documentary and does give you quite a window into life in Nigeria for these young people. And what kind of led them to want to make these short films. So this one is called Crocodile. It is a documentary. There are showings of that on Friday and Saturday, and you can check out tickets and so on at the website.
And one of the filmmakers actually has a musical career too.
Yes.
And so we tracked down a song that he did called Proud of You. And this is by one of the critics called Godwin.
This is Raymond E. Feist, the man who started the Rift War. Will it help if I say I'm sorry? Zero G. It's totally lacking in gravity.
That was a track from Godwin, also one of the members of The Critics, a filmmaking group out of Nigeria. But that was from Godwin's musical career, and that was called Proud of You.
So next in our little survey of some of the MIF items, and if you want to check out our full sort of pull list in comic book terms, it's on our Zero G Facebook page as well, one of just the titles with by genre ones as well. So Ghost in the Cell, which is a fantasy horror movie We're sharing a cell with the more extreme J-horror splasher movies like Tokyo Gore Police, Machine Girl, Dead Sushi, etc. Mm-hmm. But this is an Indonesian horror movie. The director and writer is Joko Anwar, who did Satan's Slaves and Impetigore, which are both horror movies, and Gundala, which is a superhero movie.
Cool.
There are some cool Indonesian superhero movies. This is set in an Indonesian prison. The running gag is it's not Norway, which houses inmates of all stamp from the luxurious VIP suites reserved for drug lords and well-connected politicals to the grubby hellholes for everyone else. It's ruled by gangs of all sorts and systematically corrupt guards and a very ambitious warden who wants a political career. Jeffrey is the unhinged and brutal chief guard in this terrible setup. Enter Dimas, a mild-mannered journalist convicted of murdering and butchering his editor. Falls in amongst a crew of more intellectual criminals, shall I say, including a professor, a kind-hearted robber, a talented phone scammer, and so on. Okay. One of them can see auras, he claims. Yeah. Now, look, there's no jail situation that can't be made worse by a science fiction or fantasy monster, or a ghost in this case. Or even in one memorable comic book, an alien predator, you know, like the Yautja from the series. Actually, it very much reminds me of classic Star Trek episodes, The Day of the Dove, and also Wolf in the Fold, only pushed beyond those, beyond even the freshly minted horror episode of Star Trek Strange New Worlds that we saw last week. Mm-hmm. So what does this have in it? It's got social commentary about Indonesian prisons and about exploitation of forests and illegal mining. It has body horror, more splashy prosthetics that would do John Carpenter's The Thing proud. Mm-hmm. Fantasy, of course, elements of ghosts. It's got comedy. I don't know what it is, cross-genre. One of the ways to combat the monster ghost involves dance-offs.
Oh, fab. I'm in.
I don't think so. This is where everything becomes truly unbalanced, but also weirdly in harmony. So, yes, there are bloopers at the end with dancing.
Great. Great.
The message overall I find quite laudable, that violence does not have to be the way. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Just the way that they get there is quite horrific. You know, I mean, there are scenes where they will discover a body and everybody, you know, when they hear a noise, they all of the inmates rush to the place where it is.
Yes.
Look in the door and it's like, dun, dun, dun. Mm. And they all rush away and lock themselves in their own cells. Oh, it is a strange film with weird sensibilities. But I kind of expected that for the Melbourne International Film Festival. It is called Ghost in the Cell, and it's a fantasy horror movie.
They're showing on this Friday, the 14th of August, a late night showing.
Of course.
Which is perfect. And also there's a session next Saturday, the 22nd. That one's on standby, though, so you can look up tickets for that at the website.
It's part of the night shift.
Yeah.
Which always attracts their OG interest. All right, now to another one which is less graphically violent, unless you happen to be a seabird.
Yeah, with a bad sense of what your reflection is, yes.
Yesterday Island, which is a fantasy slash science fiction. Mm-hmm. Not sure which one it really falls into. Could go both ways. Mm-hmm. Directed and written by Sam Vultas, who's been making films in China, or ones related to Chinese activities. And it basically revolves around a midnight phone call from an estranged old mate to a character called Amos. Not the Amos from The Expanse. They've got issues between them, but, you know, he's making it up. So it's like, can you come and stay on my island, which is an isolated Antarctic sort of research base? Mm-hmm. I just need you to come and stay there for a day while I go off and accept an award for some scientific research I've done. And it's an odd request, but Amos is up for it. He's a writer. He's got writer's block. Mm-hmm. And he thinks this will be the thing that shakes me out.
Yeah, remote island.
Yes. Yeah. Francis Greenslade plays Dusty, the guy who makes the call. He's got a satellite phone, by the way, just so you know. And Amos is played by Ivan Aristigueta, who is the sap, basically, who decides he's going to shack up on the island for the night.
Yes, he's our everyman in peril.
Now, this is a time loop movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's, you know what's going to happen.
Yeah, so if you're a fan of like One More Shot with Emily Browning or Palm Springs, which is a very underrated film, or, of course, you know,
Happy Death Day.
Happy Death Day, Groundhog Day, yeah. All of that. Mm. Yes. So some of the things we've seen before, a couple of details that I thought were pretty clever as well thrown in here to add a bit of spice to things.
It needs spice. The only food that they've got is tinned spaghetti and marshmallows.
A never-ending supply though, Rob.
possibly whatever seabird keeps racking itself up against the hut. There are rules.
Yes.
Time loop procedural. I don't think we'll go into those too much.
No, best to discover for yourself, I think.
Because that's what happens to the people who end up there. I think they make excellent use of that procedural.
Yeah.
And there's also good use made of the location of the small research outpost.
Yeah, it's a really lovely setting. I think the production design here is great in terms of, you know, the little kind of shack, the base, the little base hut that they're in, and even the landscape. It's all, there's a little tinges of a bit of Steve Zissou vibe, but,
good point.
Australian island style.
I like the way the base, it makes sense to me. There's what a survival sort of pod that it clearly grew from, and then they built a hut onto
attached,
that.
Attached, yeah. Yes.
So, you know, it's not as lavish as Outpost 31 and John Carpenter's The Thing, but, you know, it makes perfect sense. And there's another base on the island with some ornithologists.
Zoologists,
yes. And it all makes sense within itself. There's a good sense of place. You know that there's a certain distance they have to go to the beach.
Yep. You generally start to get the understanding of the rules and the procedural at play. Really lovely cold open as well that instantly had me a bit hooked.
Yes,
so there's
yes.
some mystery. You know, just things unfold for Amos and you as the viewer in a really very charming way.
Florence Noble plays Gemma, another strandee on the island. And I think they interact extremely well.
Yeah, I mean, it hinges very much on, you know, obviously, as with all good time loops, it's not just about we're stuck in a time loop.
Mm.
We're going to start to use that to tease out maybe some character backstory or a little bit of interesting history and that kind of thing. So it's not just about eating the same tin of spaghetti day after day.
I think this is actually a perfect time loop film.
I think I really enjoyed it. I think it's just enough whimsy, but it's got a lot of heart. And the time loop I was very into. I loved the setting and I was very keen. You know, things ramp up, obviously, and it's, you know, you're really hooked and you're ready to see how Amos is going to get out of his situation.
Do we want to have a look at any of the other films or are we sort of running out of time?
I think to do them justice, maybe we can hold off on, there's a few more that we could speak of, but just to wrap up on that one is Yesterday Island time loop film. That one has a session this Saturday. Sadly, it's on standby though. There's one next Wednesday, which is selling quite fast. And then there's one next Saturday, the 22nd as well, which is also on standby. But you can try your luck there for Yesterday Island. Really, I love a time. I think I'm actually a sucker for the time loop because there's so many unique ways it can be used.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you couple it with a really strong voice or sense of place, as it has done here for Yesterday Island, it's a really enjoyable way to structure a film.
And yeah, the comedic elements are there, definitely.
Absolutely, yeah. I think it's great. And you know, you sit and you think, oh, what would I do? Would I behave the same way? So
yes, there's an ethical dilemma.
Yeah, there's a little bit of ethical dilemma there, but then it's undercut with comedy. So yeah, it's quite fun. So that was just a couple of our selections from The Myth that we've been lucky enough to view and give a little review for. Do we want to run through what they were again just briefly, Rob?
Yes. As I said before, you can check out our pick list at the Zero G Facebook page. And also, obviously, you can check out the program guide.
Yep.
But the films that we saw, Chronovisor, the science fiction film about the past viewing machine.
Mm-hmm.
Replica, about AI and AI companions. That's a documentary.
Yes.
Mum, I'm Alien Pregnant, which is a science fiction comedy body horror movie. Then there is also Crocodile, the documentary with a sci-fi element, because the critics in that are actually making little sci-fi films. Quite big ones, actually. Ghost in the Cell, which is an Indonesian fantasy horror movie. And Yesterday Island, which is a fantasy slash science fiction. We're still not sure.
Quirky time loop film.
Yeah. Some of them recommended. Some were more fun than others. But they're always intriguing. That's the thing. That's why we do MIFF, because there are weird and wonderful films there.
And truly, I mean, if you just look at that list, how diverse is that, you know? And that's just some of the selections that are in the program this year, which you can find, of course, miff.com.au on the app or the physical program.
Did you hear that there is now a national porridge-making competition in Australia? There already was kind of one, but it's acquired a boost from that documentary.
The impact of the golden spurtle.
Yeah.
Fabulous. That was such a fun one too.
Yeah.
MIFF has always got lots of lovely on-screen joys to get along to if you can, or you can stream online as well. As mentioned before, check out all the information at miff.com.au. Also, don't forget that Radiothon is kicking off from this Friday, August 14th. So next week, our Zero G show will be our Radiothon show, and we will be giving away some notional. Are we sure yet what we'll be giving away?
No, actually.
Well, we've got a week to think it up. So, but there will be some notional things to be given away during our hour next year, and we'll give you more info on that as it unfolds.
Let's give you a bit of a track. How much time we got left? 57, 145. I'm just thinking if this is going to bring us through. It should do. This is a track that got used in Ghost in the Cell.
Uh-huh.
I think I did well not saying Ghost in the Shell. Naughty filmmakers. Tonight You Belong to Me, which is a Nancy, in this case it's Nancy Sinatra from an album called Bubblegum Girl, Volume 2. And it plays over the closing credits of Ghost in the Cell, which I was just thinking, this is a perfect song.
Being a bit cheeky there, I think, aren't they?
Joe Brunetic coming up next with Astral Glamour. Thank you, Megan.
Thank you, Rob.
G'day, this is Rob Jan. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Triple R's Zero G, a weekly radio show exploring science fiction, fantasy and historical. Zero G is broadcast live on Triple R from Melbourne, Australia every Monday. Hope you enjoy the podcast and feel free to get in touch with us via our Facebook page or the Triple R website.